Well, good afternoon. Good afternoon, district and friends. This is Jim Lafferty along with Maria Hall, bringing you this week's edition of the Lawyers Guild Show. We thank you for joining us. Maria, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Jim. How about you?
Well, so far, so good. Let our listeners know what they're in for if they stay tuned.
Okay, well, we've got another great show today. In our first half hour, we'll speak with our friend, constitutional scholar Stephen Rohde, about the Supreme Court's refusal to hear McKesson versus Doe, a case that could have shored up the First Amendment right to organize mass protests. But alas, we'll hear what happened. Then we'll be joined by our other friend, Assange Defense National Organizing Director Vincent DeStefano, who will update us about some big news regarding assurances, quote unquote, made by the U.S. officials to try to convince a British court to extradite Julian Assange.
Yeah, hiss boom on both of those. These are not happy stories, but they're essential stories, folks. Essential certainly to the kind of audience we have here on the Lawyers Guild Show and on KPFK in general. So let's take the first topic, and that is indeed this McKesson case. The headline in the online publication Vox read as follows, and I quote, "The Supreme Court effectively abolishes the right to mass protest in three U.S. states," close quote. Now, the three states referred to are Louisiana, Texas, and Mississippi. But it sent shockwaves throughout the broader community of political groups and organizers across the country that, well, routinely stage mass protests. The basic facts are these. A few days ago, the Supreme Court announced that it would not hear the case of McKesson v. Doe, which now leaves in place a lower court opinion that effectively eliminated the right to organize a mass protest in these three states. Why? Well, because under that lower court's decision, any protest organizer faces potentially ruinous financial consequences if even a single attendee at the mass protest organized by that organizer commits an illegal act. Now, the lower court in question is the Federal Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit, excuse me, and at least for now, its decision is the law in much of the American South. Well, to understand how this major curtailment of the First Amendment's right to gather in mass protest, past protests, you know, government policies, government actions, we're going to turn, of course, as Maria said, to our resident expert in such matters. He is Stephen Rohde. Now, Mr. Rohde is a noted constitutional scholar and activist. He is the past chair of the ACLU Foundation of Southern California, the founder and current chair of Interfaith Communities United for Justice and Peace. He is the author of American Words of Freedom and the book Freedom of Assembly. Stephen Rohde is a regular contributor to the Los Angeles Review of Books and to Truthdig, and he is a leader in the national campaign to free imprisoned investigative journalist Julian Assange, whose story we're going to take up in the second half hour today. Well, Steve Rohde, a very warm welcome back to the Lawyers Guild Show.
Thank you, Jim and Maria. I'm really happy to be here in the sense of sharing this important information with you.
Yes, thank you for doing so, Steve. Well, Steve, for the past several years, the Fifth Circuit Federal Court of Appeals would appear to have been persistently and consciously going after DeRay McKesson, who is a prominent figure within the Black Lives Matter movement in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And he's the McKesson in the case of McKesson v. Doe, the case from the Fifth Circuit that the Supreme Court has just declined to review. The facts of this very interesting and disturbing case relate to a protest that Mr. McKesson organized back in 2016 at a Baton Rouge police station. So, Steve, what are those facts and what was the finding in the case and the reasoning behind that finding in the Fifth Circuit?
Well, thank you, Jim. It's very important for our audience to get the context of what's happening in this case.
Absolutely.
Nationally, I think there's a huge crackdown on dissent, on public demonstrations, on freedom of speech. Depending on our time, we'll be able to explore a little of that at the toward the end of this half hour. I do want to trace the rather convoluted history of this case because it's important to show what the legal system puts protesters through if they try to vindicate their First Amendment rights to speak and to assemble. And in doing that, I'd ask listeners to imagine that they have organized or joined in the organizing of a rally, a big rally, a small rally on whatever issue concerns them. But think about DeRay McKesson, the BLM organizer, as you hear what the law is putting him through for simply exercising his right to organize and to protest. You're right that back in July 2016, after some police shootings in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, Black Lives Matter, under the leadership of McKesson, organized a protest. They gathered on a highway in front of the police headquarters. And as officers began to make arrests, an unidentified person threw either a piece of concrete or rock, striking an officer of the police department. He, throughout the proceedings, the officer is only identified as Officer Doe in a fictitious name. It did hit his face. It caused loss of teeth and brain trauma. But the perpetrator of that incident was never identified to this day, neither identified as a supporter of BLM or an opponent of BLM or a passerby. In 2017, the officer filed a negligence lawsuit against McKesson, but the U.S. District Court immediately dismissed the case as being barred by the First Amendment. And frankly, the case should have ended there. That district judge made good sense by citing a leading U.S. Supreme Court case that goes back to 1982, which I'll talk about in a moment. Unfortunately, that Fifth Circuit, this is a conservative circuit that does cover Louisiana, Texas, and Mississippi, in a 2-1 decision, reversed the district court. Applying Louisiana state law, the two judges, the majority, conceded that no one has a duty to protect others from the criminal acts of a third party. That's basic American tort law in most states. But that Fifth Circuit didn't leave it there. And they said that a violent confrontation with a police officer was a foreseeable effect of negligently directing a protest onto the highway in front of the police station. Well, that shattered the precedent from before. And by the way, throughout this, I'm proud to say that McKesson was represented by the National ACLU. So by November of 2000, the case reached the Supreme Court and they made their decision. Now, it was a rather weak decision. It was a 7-1 decision to vacate the Fifth Circuit judgment. And frankly, if they left it there, our rights would still be fully protected. But Clarence Thomas dissented, and six of the justices did an unusual thing. They certified a question to go back to the Louisiana Supreme Court, asking whether the law of negligence in Louisiana even created a legal cause of action in the first place. But the Supreme Court did not rule on the fundamental First Amendment question. Frankly, since the First Amendment supersedes any state law, the court at that moment could have tackled the First Amendment issue and put an end to this. Instead, in March of 2022, the Louisiana Supreme Court responded that under Louisiana law, well, lo and behold, there is a duty not to negligently precipitate the crime of a third party. So they clarified at best that law and kept the case alive. Then it went back up to the Fifth Circuit, and finally they said that the police officer had successfully alleged two things: that McKesson had directed his own tortious activity, blocking the highway, which created an unsafe condition, and two, it was likely that a violent confrontation with police would result. McKesson did not have to intend any violence to be held liable for criminal conduct of third parties. And again, the Fifth Circuit rejected McKesson's First Amendment defense. So that's why I ask you to put yourselves in the shoes. You've organized a protest. You've been peaceful. The key people you've organized have been peaceful. But someone somewhere issues a crime, commits a crime, and now McKesson is being held liable. Finally, we all hoped that the case now with the negligence issues cleaned up would get to the U.S. Supreme Court. And all they had to do was ratify and validate their 1982 decision, and they did not do that. On Monday of this week, on April 15, the court denied review, that legal term. They denied certiorari, and they refused to take up the Fifth Circuit decision. It takes four votes on the court to hear a case, and they could not get four votes. There are only three liberals on the court and six conservatives. But to her credit, I am the biggest fan of Justice Sotomayor. She issued a separate statement. She explained, because she feared that this would be thought to have set some kind of precedent for the entire country. So she explained that the denial of review by the Supreme Court expressed no view on the merits of McKesson's First Amendment defense, because the Supreme Court had issued a key decision after the Fifth Circuit's latest ruling clarifying the First Amendment issues. And we'll talk about that case in a moment. And she wagged her finger at the lower courts to give full and fair consideration to the First Amendment issues in any future proceeding in this case, because this was only the pleading stage. The case now has to go back to trial. But that's what tees up this very unfortunate case.
Well, Steve Brody, Justice Sotomayor, as you mentioned, had that extra opinion that she also wrote. And she pointed out the Supreme Court recently reaffirmed the strong First Amendment protections afforded to protest organizers like McKesson in their case, Counterman versus Colorado. Why do you think Justice Sotomayor felt it was relevant in this case, the McKesson case? And what about the case from 1982, NAACP versus Claiborne Hardware? Isn't that also relevant here?
Yes, both of these cases are very important. And frankly, any objective observer should see that the Sotomayor statement should have been converted into the majority opinion. Just recently, last year in 2023, the Supreme Court handed down a case called Counterman versus Colorado. It actually had to do with social media and whether there was a true threat. But what was said in that case by the majority of the court was that the First Amendment bars the use of any legal theory like negligence to punish speech. Instead, a showing of intent is required. Specifically, the full Supreme Court in Counterman said the First Amendment precludes punishment for incitement, for example, whether civil or criminal, unless the speaker's words were intended, not just likely, to produce imminent disorder. So right off the bat, now you have a very recent case reaffirming this high standard. No one ever alleged, the police officer never alleged, and the Fifth Circuit never found that McKesson intended a police officer to be injured. That was never an element. So this case should have been dismissed by citing Counterman, but Sotomayor had the further precedent on her side, which was that 1982 case in NAACP versus Claiborne. That's an important case for all of us. Excuse me. Back in March of 1966, the NAACP voted to boycott white merchants in Fort Gibson, Mississippi, to protest racial inequality. By April of 1968, the NAACP field secretary led a march in support of the boycott. And a few days later, he made a speech. Now, listen to how strong his words were on this occasion. He said, quote, "If we catch any of you going into these racist stores, we're going to break your damn neck."
Yeah.
And in 10 instances, Blacks who were seen breaking the boycott did experience violence, including shots fired into their houses and bricks thrown through their windshield. In October of 1969, 17 merchants filed suit against Charles Evers to recover losses caused by the boycott. So it was the white merchants that sued. But it was in the course of that decision in July of 1982 that the U.S. Supreme Court held first that boycotts are a form of nonviolent protected activity under the First Amendment. Let me put a bracket in here for you as hosts and our audience, because there's been a lot of pushback about the BDS movement and boycotts, and people are up in arms. Boycotts are as American as apple pie. They go back to the early days of our country. They are a form of assembly and of free speech. That court pointed out that Evers did not authorize, ratify, or directly threaten any acts of violence. So it seems to me the combination of the NAACP case and the Counterman more recent case established a wall, a block that invalidated the police officer's lawsuit against McKesson. When you have a strong First Amendment precedent. It has been reiterated recently. It is binding precedent. The court simply could have done a one-paragraph decision and cited those cases and dismissed the lawsuit against McKesson.
It's one reason, Steve, isn't it, why it's so damn frightening, this decision of the Supreme Court, because it is so obvious. They didn't have to look. 2023 is fairly current. And then beyond that, and you alluded to this, I think, earlier, but I want you to comment on it as well. There was one of the three judges on that Fifth Circuit case whose head was screwed on straight, and he made the interesting point. Judge Willett was his name. He pointed out that the court's decision would hold protest organizers liable for, and here I'm quoting, an unlawful act of counter-protesters and agitators. And I think went on to say, could be some government agent. Who the heck knows who did it? I think you alluded to that, but talk to us a bit about how that makes this ruling even more unexplainable.
Yes, there have been several judges along the way who've gotten it right. That district judge who dismissed the case right off the bat.
Yeah.
That dissenting judge at the Fifth Circuit, they've been following the law. And there's no telling who an unidentified assailant might be. And we've both examined and articulated a variety of examples. It is a terrifying notion in America today, because these cases under this logic or illogic could lead to hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars in damages, depending on the injury, let alone the death of any police officer. And the rule isn't limited to police officers. It could be another protester. It could be a passerby. It so expands the risk of mounting a protest in America today that it has the intimidating impact that the Vox article mentioned, and that we all have to be worried about. And that's, I think that's the point. That was the point of the police officers' lawsuit, was to intimidate Black Lives Matter. And it's the not so subtle purpose of the U.S. Supreme Court, those six justices, ducking this issue, kind of coyly sending it back to the Fifth Circuit without lifting up the First Amendment doctrines. It wasn't a matter of first impression. It wasn't a difficult. We looked at the allegation. McKesson was not accused of any intent or of any deliberate or intentional wrongdoing. And it would have been a good day for the First Amendment if the court had said that. On some issues, this conservative court upholds free speech, but often it will uphold hate speech or speech on the internet. And we've had programs on that, and you know my views that under the American experiment, we do have to accept some controversial and offensive speech in the meantime to uphold free speech for the rest of us. But this court, this kind of a decision is such a tip of the iceberg that they will use procedures. And I want to reiterate my earlier point. Thank goodness for the ACLU. What I've described are years of litigation. The great burden that litigation places on protesters and groups that are outside the American mainstream. This is a tactic to burden them with depositions, lawsuits, and motions. And that's exactly what is going on in this case.
If you're just tuning in, this is the Lawyers Guild Show on KPFK 90.7 FM. I'm Maria Hall here with my co-host Jim Lafferty, and we're interviewing Steve Rohde. And just by way of mention, it is KPFK Fund Drive time, so please donate at kpfk.org right now. That's how you can say thank you to KPFK for bringing us all of these wonderful independent voices day after day, hour after hour, and every dollar counts.
Yeah, we say independent. I mean, I know there's some exceptions here to it, our guests we have. Generally speaking, the guests we have are rarely, if ever, seen on CNN or CBS or anywhere else in terms of the corporate media. These two gentlemen have been from time to time, but they don't generally get a half hour or 25 minutes to plead their case, I might add. That's only here. We're part of the movement here. The movement tells us that all the time. The progressive movement in LA depends on us to get their message out in a way that no other broadcast media does, or in fact wants to do, let alone does. And they always tell us when somebody appears on a show, whether they're talking about the Assange case, which we'll be talking about in a few minutes, or the case that Steve's been talking about having to do with Black Lives Matter and the right of mass protesters to enjoy their First Amendment rights. It enhances the fortunes of these progressive groups. So when you contribute to KPFK, it's kind of like one-stop shopping, if you will. You're contributing to all of the progressive movement in LA, and those groups themselves tell us that all the time. So go to our website. That's a good place to do it. You can see all the ways we say thank you to it. Give us a call at 818-985-5735 right now, if you would, please. We're going to get right back now. 818-985-5735. Please do that. We depend on it. We don't take corporate sponsorship. We don't get money from the federal government. It's just you folks. And we know you're part of this movement too. So we've all got to pitch in. Please give us a call. Go to the website, contribute now. Steve, well, actually, I think Maria, well, whatever. The last thing I think we wanted to ask you to talk about was, I don't think we should rest easy simply because the Supreme Court didn't say something bad. The fact that it didn't take the case is sent chills up my spine. I mean, all of us on this call, in fact, I think have had at various times in their life have organized these very kinds of protests. So the fact that the Supreme Court here didn't uphold the Fifth Circuit ruling, but simply also didn't bother to take the case and overrule it, which they should have done, as I say, sends chills up my spine. Am I being irrational? Am I worrying about nothing?
I am sitting here with a chilled spine, Jim. This is very dangerous. And before I answer that question, I am going to give KPFK a commercial. If listeners have learned anything in the last 25 minutes, as well as in the next 35 minutes with Vinny DiStefano, if you've heard some new information, if this case has not hit the headlines on your social media or on CNN or elsewhere, because they don't talk about cases like that. If any of that has occurred in your listening, contribute to KPFK. That's why we'll be able to continue to do programs like this. I am very concerned by this Supreme Court for all of the reasons we talk about, and this case concerned me even more because of its subtle endorsement of this Fifth Circuit ruling. What mischief will the courts engage in over the next few years as this case goes back to trial, whether a jury will find McKesson liable or not, the appeals that will come from that. But meanwhile, this notion is out there of negligence. And I see it, as I said at the very outset, as part of a larger attempt in state legislatures to silence dissent, to silence the teaching of the 1619 Project, of silencing critical race theory, of isolating anyone who thinks differently than the mainstream conservative views. Within the last few days, Asna Tabassum was denied her
Yes.
valedictorian speech at USC. This is shocking. This afternoon, the House of Representatives, by an overwhelming vote, adopted a resolution that the chant "From the River to the Sea, Palestine Will Be Free" is outright anti-Semitism and should be condemned. That was a 377 to 44 to 1 vote
I know,
of
just
Congress.
ridiculous.
It puts the government, they said, well, we can condemn. No, you're the government.
Yeah.
Governments have police power. You have just isolated a political phrase which includes Palestine will be free, and you have banished it from the public debate. And meanwhile, the third hearing on anti-Semitism went on this morning at the House with the president of Columbia University and others being bashed for trying to attempt to educate Congress that there's a line between free speech and what could constitute violence, harassment, incitement, or true threats. So we are in the midst of another era. Those hearings have the McCarthyite smell to them of dragging people and belittling them and intimidating them. I think that's why a case like McKesson is important. People should follow the case as it continues. And ultimately, the Supreme Court is a political body. Presidents nominate Supreme Court justices. We have to keep that in mind. But as long as we've got KPFK and a program like this, scores of people are going to learn about these cases and they're going to learn to take action. And I hope they're not intimidated. I hope
Yes.
that we
Yes.
have robust, wide open free speech. We exercise our freedom of assembly, and we demonstrate to the powers that be that we are not going to be silenced and we're not going to be intimidated.
Because the easiest way to lose it is to stop using it, that's for sure. Steve, you just have a minute left here. I want people to know how they can follow your writings. I alluded to it a bit in the introduction, but please tell our listeners how they can, because you do some wonderful stuff, and they ought to be able to find you other than when you're here.
Well, that's very kind. Yeah, I'm very grateful to LA Review of Books, LARB, on the website. The Truth Dig has reemerged in the last few years as a powerful voice. To lead into your next segment with my good friend, Truth Dig has an entire section on their site devoted to Julian Assange. I also write for the wonderful LA Progressive, Dick Price and Sharon Kyle, who are doing so much good work to spread this kind of information. So all of that, what I exercise my free speech and freedom of the press, and you can find that stuff online.
Well, Steve Rudy, I urge our listeners to do it. And I you know, I'm not only so grateful for your work, but I thank you for your willingness to come on the show and explain, as you did today, something that's quite a complicated case. It's simple in some ways, but the background of the case and how they've been harassing this guy for years is quite complicated. You made it understandable. So we thank you again for being here with us on the Lawyers Guild Show, my friend. All right. Now, stay tuned. We're going to take a brief station ID.
Nope, Jim, we're not. We're going to pitch through the break.
Oh, we're going to pitch through the break.
We are.
That's good. People are thrilled all over the LA area now. People are tuning up the volume on their radios.
That's right. To hear Jim Lafferty pitch. And I do keep thinking that, you know, Amy Goodman has the premium where if you pay $2,000 to donate, then you can have dinner with her. So I was thinking we could auction you off for like $5,000.
I was going to say more like $20, but that's probably what people would pay. But no, you raise a good point, not about dinner with me so much, although I'd be thrilled to do that. It's that you can make contributions that are larger. $25 will make you part of the voting part of KPFK, and you get to vote for everything. You're a member. You get a chance to be on raffles and all sorts of things. But some of the folks listening here, and most of the people listening are happily not lawyers. They're just people whose minds have not been warped, in fact, by the study of law. Sure. But, and so that's good. And we bring that legal message to them the way that Steve can, and Vinny's going to do in a minute. So keep that in mind too, folks, that if you are out there, either you are a lawyer or you've got some good job, give us $500, make a pledge for $500, please. We've had that happen in the Lawyers Guild show a number of times. I would urge it again today if somebody's listening, it's got those kind of bucks. Others who are listening who may be out of a job at the moment or whatever, having fun. Hey, don't feel you have to do it. Don't feel you're not entitled to listen. We're thrilled that you're listening, whether you can afford to join us or not. It's just that we can't afford to keep doing this unless those who can't afford it give us a call at 818-985-5735 and make a pledge. Or yeah. Go... As Maria, you always say, go to the website. We could tell you about some CDs, and I always get some of the great music collections, you know, of some of the great blues singers in the past or what have you. All sorts of ways to get all sorts of thank you gifts from us when you donate. We like to think the biggest thank you is that we stay on the air, and that's always a struggle for a station like us. We stay on the air. We keep being part of the movement. We're sort of the PR arm, if you will, for the progressive movement in LA. So please, before we get to our next topic, and we only take now about 5 minutes of every show, 6-7 minutes maybe. We used to take, you know, 20, 30 minutes of a show. Yeah. Bitch, we don't do that anymore. Well, it's cost us some money, frankly.
Yeah.
You know, we make no bones about that. But we did it because we are in such desperate times. I mean, you think about this case that the Supreme Court didn't take, and what that means to protest. Think about if Donald Trump is elected president. Think about what that's going to mean to protest. Yeah. And we're going to have to keep plugging along. So we need your support. You can give it to us by going online at kpfk.org. You can give us a call at the 818-985-5735 number. Maria, last thoughts before we do get to our...
Yeah, I mean, I think most of our listeners are probably like us, Jim, and Jim and I are both volunteers. And I think they probably also are not really great at, you know, not really motivated by making a ton of money, because we do our work out of love. We're not that good at making money. I mean, that's kind of our point of being. So I think if you're like us too, yeah, it happens that, you know, if we all pitch in a little bit what we can, then we can keep this boat afloat. You know, when I have money, I'll pitch in. If I don't have money, somebody else is going to pitch in. We're all doing it together. That's what we believe. That's the ideal. And we believe we can make it happen. And that's how KPFK has stayed on the air for so long.
So long. Thank you so much, Maria. But so keep calling, folks. Keep going to the website. Keep donating. Let's now, let's get to the other topic because it's so darn important. And it gets more important and more desperate with every passing day, I might add. It has to do with freedom of press in America. And it's hanging by a very thin thread at the moment, my friends, very thin thread. And why is that? Well, because the effort to save Julian Assange, that courageous journalist and publisher of WikiLeaks, is just about out of options. You'll recall that Assange, a citizen of Australia, has been jailed for years in England, facing extradition to the United States, where if he is extradited, he will stand trial, face up to 175 years in prisons. For what? For publishing secret U.S. documents showing U.S. war crimes in Iraq and Afghanistan. And if the name Daniel Ellsberg comes to mind when I say that, there's a good reason for that. But this is a new day, my friends. This is a new day. All right. Yesterday, in connection with what may be Assange's last real chance to appeal against that extradition to America, the United States, at the request of the Brits, sent to the English court some so-called assurances that if Assange is, as requested by the U.S., sent back for trial to the U.S., he will, one, not face the death penalty and can, with, of course, no absolute guarantee of success, we'll get into that, claim, even though he's not a U.S. citizen, he can at least argue he has rights under our First Amendment. Well, are these so-called assurances worth the paper they're printed on? Why has the Biden administration refused to do what the Obama administration did? That is, not press on with the prosecution of Assange that Trump was so anxious about doing. There is now a worldwide movement to free Julian Assange, including the world's leading organizations that protect and defend journalists' free press rights. Why again? Well, because if the United States can succeed in its efforts to finally silence Julian Assange, then freedom of the press will not only be dead in America, but also seriously undermined in countries all over the world. Well, to explain all of this today, we're fortunate again to have as our guest Vincent DiStefano, the National Organizing Director of the U.S. Julian Assange Defense Committee. Mr. DiStefano is also the treasurer of the Pasadena Foothills chapter of the ACLU. He sits as well on the Southern California ACLU Affiliates Board and Executive Committee. He's been a leading member of Amnesty International for, well, four decades now. He looks so young, too. It's amazing. Four decades now. And he was honored as its Urgent Action Letter Writer of the Year back in 2019, not that long ago. Vince DiStefano, a warm welcome back to the Lawyers Guild Show.
Thank you so much for having me, both you and Maria. Thank you very, very much.
Well, Vinny, remind our listeners very briefly, because there's so much we have to cover. What has been Julian Assange's legal journey? Now, you can't hit all the beats. What's been that main legal journey since he published in WikiLeaks those tens of thousands of secret U.S. documents showing those war crimes? And in particular, though, explain where his case now stands as far as his ability to appeal any further. The findings of the British court so far paving the way for his extradition to the U.S. And if he's sent back, the rather certain conviction at that highly conservative court in Virginia. So give us
Again, thank you very much. And I'd like to point out that this segment of your show dovetails nicely with Stephen's section, because as Stephen pointed out, the law of unintended consequences will lead to a hampering of dissent. What this case boils down to is the public's right to know. And once they know their right to dissent, then that is what they wish to hamper. Now, your question is a good one, but it's really kind of difficult to answer because it's both complex and it's very simple. Now, that's because to date, Julian hasn't been tried for anything, nor has he been convicted of anything. What the British courts have done is they've engineered a kind of legal limbo for Julian. The limbo is where he is allowed to fight extradition over and over and over again, but remains held in the worst prison in Britain, under conditions that have already been deemed torture by Nils Melzer, the former UN rapporteur on torture. His case is an excellent example of punishment first, then trial. The British courts keep dangling carrots of relief, like these insurances, just out of Julian's defense team's reach, and at the end result of him being held in incarceration and holding off what could be a very, very embarrassing trial for the Biden administration. I think the court case is staggering along because they wish to kick the can down the road.
Well, Vinny, at the close of Assange's last court hearing in London, the court gave the Biden administration until yesterday to provide the court with certain quote-unquote assurances that if they do extradite Assange to the U.S. to stand trial, he will have certain rights or guarantees. What assurances from the U.S. did the British court request?
Well, the British court allowed the defense to contest on three motions: that he would not be subjected to the death penalty, and there was an assurance that he would not be subjected to the penalty, more about that in a moment, and that he would be provided First Amendment protection, and lastly, he would not face an unfair trial because he's not a U.S. citizen. Now, those last two are actually kind of restating the same thing, and that's why when the U.S. provided assurances, they provided only two. As I said, they provided no death penalty assurances. Unfortunately, he could be charged for the Vault 7 releases, and he could be charged again when he's here in the United States. And the other thing, in relation to the First Amendment, I will quote the U.S. Embassy, would allow Assange the ability to raise and seek to reply upon at trial the rights to protection given under the First Amendment. I believe that statement speaks for itself.
Yeah, you're making the point, as a lawyer, you're making the point that the U.S. government can't guarantee him a damn thing when it comes to that. It will be up to the judge in this conservative federal court in Virginia as to whether or not this non-citizen can raise the U.S. constitutional First Amendment as a defense. And I don't know about you, my friends, but I sure wouldn't bet whatever money I have on that one. So that assurance is not worth the paper it's written on, I think. I'm sorry. Maria, go ahead.
It was your turn, Jim.
But even on the death penalty, you started to point out that they can't really give them an assurance on that either, can they?
No, they really can't. Now, I couldn't agree with you more in terms of not being worth the paper they're printed on. What I believe we have here, to use a Watergate era reference, is a non-assurance assurance. You have the right to ask, and we have the right to deny. Now, as you said, I wouldn't bet the house on that either. In anyone's book, it's not an assurance. So let me add one more short note. Daniel Hale, for those of our listeners unfamiliar, he's a whistleblower who was provided very, very similar assurances in his trial that he would not be treated poorly. And once he was sentenced, to use your own words, those assurances were not worth the paper they were printed on. More importantly, regarding those assurances, is that the British courts, for some inexplicable reason, appear to be ignorant of the concept of the separation of powers, which is a foundational element of our government. Now, I'll give them the defense here, because we've only had it in place for 248 years. Yeah. All kidding aside, the embassy speaking on behalf of the executive branch can make every assurance they want. The judicial branch is free to ignore them, as they do and have done in the past, with impunity. So much for the assurances. They are not worth the paper they're printed on.
But before we turn it over and we go further, I want you to explain something else, though, because I think maybe in our question we forgot, which is Julian is the one possible saving grace here, is that Julian is now going to be allowed, and I think the argument is in May 20th, Julian is going to be allowed, is he not, now to argue before the British court, look, you see, even that they admit that they can't assure that I'll be able to raise this First Amendment right of freedom of the press and what have you. Do you think that in terms of his right to get a fuller appeal, do you have a thought about that?
I would reply the same way I did before. This is kicking the can down the road. That is the legal limbo, a carrot held out to say, we're going to allow you to have another trial Because the idea is, I think at a minimum, is to kick this past the election. Biden does not want to have a First Amendment case in the Eastern District Court of Virginia where discovery will be allowed based on what happened in the Spanish courts and the courts in New York, where they allowed discovery in the suit against the CIA. That means June will be able to hear to reveal all of that information in trial.
Mm-hmm.
Well, from the moment the U.S. filed its application to extradite Assange to the U.S. to stand trial, there's been speculation over whether he could even get a fair hearing in England as he and his team of lawyers try to fight the extradition, given the cozy relationship between the U.S. and England. What are your thoughts on this issue?
Well, you know, Maria, I think that's an excellent question, and it's the issue that is the most difficult thing to get my head wrapped around. That's because the British court's behavior has been so utterly atrocious, Kafkaesque, Orwellian, whatever you want to call it, as to be almost unbelievable. Make no mistake, the British courts have behaved as quislings to the U.S. intelligence agencies, without a doubt. They needed to operate in a very bizarre manner. Things, for example, petty things, large things. They separate Julian from his lawyers in a plexiglass booth, making it impossible for him to confer with them. They take and they ignore the fact that the CIA, and this has been verified, had plans under Mike Pompeo to kidnap and kill Julian, down to tiny things like the pettiness, the way they treated the press and the public in their right to know what was happening in the trial by not broadcasting it to anywhere other than England and in Scotland, and by making certain that even though press representatives were in the courtroom, they couldn't hear, they couldn't see, they couldn't write down their documents. I mean, it really is petty beyond belief. Petty beyond belief. Now, I think what they're trying to do is their casual level of indifference that this court has shown, his defense, the press, the public, may be of nigh to impossible based on their behavior to expect a fair trial from this court.
Well, and you know, just going back even a little further, it gets lost in the shuffle because of all the things that are more dramatic that you quite properly have talked about. And we could go on and on with those, in fact. But the treaty itself between the United States and England provides that there shall be no extradition if either one of these two factors are at play. One, torture may be involved. And as you've already pointed out, torture is definitely involved in the UN's repertoire of torture talk about it. And clearly, if it's a political case. Now, anybody who thinks the Julian Assange case, who released all these documents about U.S. war crimes and the effort now in the worldwide movement to keep him from being murdered or locked away for the rest of his life isn't a political case, then, you know, they exist.
You know, Chip Gibbons, we were on a webinar on the 11th, on the fifth anniversary of Julian being in jail, and Chip Gibbons addressed this. He said in his first year in law school, he said that they chose a political case and it was the 1917 Espionage Act. It's right there in the first year law books.
Yeah, that's what Julian's charged with, right? No, I mean, it's got politics written all over it, for God's sakes. Yes. So the English court, if they had any honor, if they weren't just lackeys of the United States, would have thrown it out years ago instead of letting it drag on and on and on. All right, well, where are we at? I guess one question is, Maria, what? I know what you're going to ask because you're always concerned about this.
Oh, well, I think, yeah, actually it was actually your turn, but that's
well, okay. No, you want to talk about what we can do. We all do it. What the hell?
Oh, all right. Well, yeah, we can, of course, we can. Yeah, we definitely want to hear more about what the listeners can do because, you know, he seems so far away. He's in prison. What can we do, those of us who want to be helpful about the fate of Julian Assange?
The most important thing that the listeners can do is to raise their voices. We can't expect the Biden administration. We can't accept the Supreme Court. We can't expect anything except our own anger and our own anguish. And I would think the situation in Gaza, with all its horrible implications, people are paying attention to it because people in the streets raising their voices. And that is exactly what we need to do here. You need to call your congressmen. You need to call your senators. Each one of them swore an oath to defend the Constitution. That's what they need to do, because this is an assault, a direct assault, just like the last case we discussed, is an assault on the public's right to dissent and the public's right to know. H.R. 934. This is House Resolution 934. H.R. 934 is an agricultural bill, but H.R. 934 is a non-binding resolution that is calling for the extradition to be dropped to protect journalism. Now, this is an equal amount of people. 11 people have co-signed support, people from the squad and MAGA members, because this is not an issue that is a left or right or a Democratic issue. This is about constitutionality, about the right of the public's right to know, the right to dissent, and the right to have a free and adversarial press. Unfortunately, what we have is we have a Supreme Court that is willing to destroy that concept. Now, there are rumors of a plea deal. I know that we have rumors of, but I'm going to follow the lead of Barry Pollack. That's Julian's lead attorney and probably one of the sharpest legal minds we have in our judicial system now. And he said that while this is playing out, we don't want to say anything, because it could be something and it could be nothing, because much like the limbo they've created for Julian, it could be more example of a leading him to believe that there would be a plea opportunity and then yanking the rug out from under, much like Charlie Brown and Lucy with the football. And so our advice to people is wait and see what plays out. It would be imprudent for us to comment about something that may or may not be taking place.
And in the meanwhile, denial
from Watergate as well.
But in the meanwhile, do what Vinny says and give your congressperson a call. Hey, what are you doing about Julian Assange? This is outrageous. They have a bipartisan bunch in the Congress who are saying this should all be dropped. And you know, Vinny talked about, freedom of press, mentioned Gaza. There's a big article in the New York Times today about how we're not getting the whole story from what's going on in Gaza because Israel won't allow journalists to go into Gaza itself properly. You know, if you notice the report you're getting on CNN is from somebody miles away and miles away, and they're hearing this and they're hearing that. The only reporters that are allowed in are the reporters that happen to live there. You know, some Palestinian reporters, and a lot of them have been killed. So, and one reason why this is important, this isn't some kind of just abstract, freedom of the press is nice, but gee whiz, how do you know who to vote for? How do you know who to vote for if you can't know what they're doing? How do you know you want to vote for these guys again if they can hide secrets from you? If you don't have a press that can dig into that and find out the bad as well as the good that our politicians are doing, how do you make an informed vote? So when people say that freedom of the press, who is it, Vinny, one of the founding fathers who said freedom of the press is more important than democracy itself?
Thomas Jefferson. To choose between newspapers without a democracy or democracy without newspapers, I would definitely choose the latter.
Then you have some chance of getting a democracy. You've got democracy without a free press. You ain't got democracy.
The sad thing is that we have banners that we use all the time. And one of them says, where is Julian when we need him? And I will bring up one phrase, weapons of mass destruction. I could reference the Gulf of Tonkin resolution, babies being ripped from incubators, beheadings of babies. Truth is the first casualty of war. And what WikiLeaks did that was so important is they provided a redacted truth so people could judge for themselves, doing the same thing that I.F. Stone did many decades ago, and that is use the government's own documents to show its malfeasance, its corruptions, its lies, and its calumny. And they don't want that.
No.
And so when that's gone, we will not get it back. Like the case we just discussed in the earlier section, implications of the outcome of this case sends chills up my spine too.
Oh, yeah. And so, friends, we just have a couple of minutes left, and we do also need to pay attention to making sure we stay on the air, friends. So remember what Maria and I were talking about earlier and what Steve Rosen.
Jim, if I may.
Oh, please.
I've been
you want to give a
sponsored
plug?
To KPFK sure since 1970 when I discovered it just channel surfing one day, and I've been listening ever since. This is the only place that you can get. And I don't agree with everything I hear in KPFK, and I like it that way.
Yeah.
I want to make up my own mind. The Constitution provides every American citizen the right to be wrong, to stifle anybody's speech is to stifle our own speech. And that's why funding this station is of so paramountly important, because when Julian is convicted, this is what the government will go after. Oh, yeah. The LA Progressive, Consortium News, Substack, The Gray Zone, all of those alternative media outlets where you'll get a story that is not coming from the Pentagon or not coming from a weapons manufacturer. This is one of those few proud outlets that you can get it. And your dollars keep this show, keep this station, keep this alternative avenue of dissent operating as has for over 70 years. I turned 70 this year. This station began just shortly after I was born. Right. And I encourage everybody to give what you can. As Jim said, if you're broke, if you're unemployed, listen and enjoy it. Yeah. But give it. Give what you can. Give till it hurts.
The rest of us, give for the brothers and sisters who can't. I pledge again. I pledge right now. I don't like to say amounts, but I'll call up the station and let them know. But Maria often pledges. I'm not trying to put you on the spot. Vinny and Steve do too. Point is, you need to do that too, my friends, because we got an underpaid staff and overworked staff. But they love the place too. They could go to fancy stations and get much more money. They hang with us because they believe in what we're doing. And so please, 818-985-5735 is the number to call, or go to kpfk.org. I don't know. Now, one of you guys, when you can hear the music play, because I'm sitting here where I can't hear our theme music, knowing how much time we have left. Last thought.
Maria, you know what? I think we've got about 4 minutes left there, Jim. And I would say this, please. Good. Go to AssangeDefense.org. Go to StellaAssange.com. We have broadcast webinars. We have a wealth of information there. You can take action directly on both sites. If we have listeners that are outside the country, you can contact your MPs. You can contact your elected officials and have them speak out.
But say that again, because that's right. A lot easier for some people than calling their congressmen is to sign a petition or sign online. Give the website again.
That would be AssangeDefense.org and StellaAssange.com.
Yeah.
We have concerts every Saturday in defense of Julian Assange that are free to people from around the world with artists. And we're putting on webinars all the time that are educating the population about the threat, the dagger that this case has pressed against the heart of the U.S. Constitution.
Any concert this weekend that people could check
out?
Yes,
on Saturday. And you must forgive me for my failure to remember the exact time, because they broadcast out of London. So go to StellaAssange.com and you can see the entire schedule there.
Just Stella Assange, A-S-S-A-N-G-E
.com.
Yeah, .com. You can't, even if you spell it wrong, it'll come up.
Well, I did get word from D'Angelo. We have 1 minute left.
Oh, well, Vinny DiStefano, your work on this Assange matter has been extraordinary. I say that not just because you're our guest today. I've told you that privately. I think it's extraordinary, the work you've done. And we thank you for that, for being with us here today. We thank all of those who've listened. You're going to hear our theme music, too, and as you do, it's going to remind you of what's most important. Most important is that you stand up for your rights. Stand up for your rights, my friends. We'll be back with you the same time next week. In the meanwhile, contribute to this station. Stand up for your rights. Stay healthy. And together, we'll make some real progress.
Stand up for your rights. Get up. Stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Preacher, man, don't tell me heaven is under the earth.
If you don't already know about it, it's really time to discover KPFK. KPFK is community radio from Southern California, powered by people like yourself for over six decades now. It's part of the completely unique Pacifica network, and our listeners and sponsors are passionate. We've routinely heard them say things like,
"It is the best source of news that I know of."
The main thing that distinguishes Pacifica from the rest of the media landscape is our funding model, listener sponsorship. It allows us to speak to what really matters in our listeners' lives. Consider becoming a part of this impassioned community by making a pledge today. With your generous continuing support, KPFK is committed to serving the vast and diverse communities of Southern